Maybe we can pause it.
Pictures. And we're now being recorded, so it's official. So you're being recorded.
Oh,
no. But I was just curious, because it says community outreach partners. You have Cool Davis, Center for Land-Based Learning, De Colores, Yolo Food Bank, and then Davis Oddfellows, in addition to the Yolo Youth Commission. Were there more?
So the community outreach partner was a compensated group. We did a solicitation that was countywide that CBOs across the county applied for, and then they received a stipend to participate on the working group.
Mm-hmm.
We had a much, much larger group, a list of community-based organizations that we worked with throughout the process, either to co-facilitate events, to share materials, and things like that. But these were just the five folks who were our official community outreach partners and sat on our advisory committee. So there is another list. This isn't exhaustive for all of the outreach work.
Okay. I would be curious, I have to assume, but this is all I have, so I won't, in regards to the YOLO Children's Alliance, because obviously a really big nonprofit, and when we think about equity and engagement, one that I hope was significantly engaged. The other thing, so I said two questions, potentially three. The other thing that stuck out to me when I think about climate action, and I think about our zip codes being an indicator of life expectancy, West Sacramento, which is a city I represent, in regards to life expectancy, has a lower life expectancy in years than Davis, then Woodland, even across West Sac, the two zip codes, there's a five-year difference between those. And, you know, we have the port and other things in our city. And so I'm curious, because when I look at West Sac, one, I'm assuming this is West Sac, I actually leaned over. I was like, I just want to make sure, because we're not even, like, named. But it looks like there was one public meeting, if I'm getting that right. I want to make sure, and then some tabling events. And was curious if potentially, maybe because of the lack of nonprofits maybe that are centered in West Sac, if there was more intentionality or if there was going to be more happening in regards to engagement.
Yeah, that's a really great question. So, yeah, we did one public workshop in West Sacramento, and a number of tabling events. And we are hoping, we've got a few outreach events in West Sacramento coming up in the next few weeks. I think, you know, public engagement is something we always want to do better with. And I think that we're also a new program that's been, we've been in existence for about 2 years and have been building that network and that community engagement. And so we work with our partners at the City of West Sacramento to help share it out through their network. And they've been great. We're primarily working with the planning team there at making sure things go out through city announcements and things like that. But we have more events scheduled, would love to do more. And so that's definitely an area where we could be improving our public outreach and depth of engagement.
I would love to help you with that. And I know that both my colleagues on city council, as well as my colleagues on school board, in which you could really engage the community on this, would also, I would imagine, I know there's not a ton of time between now and June, but again, the climate, particularly in West Sacramento, right, is an issue. And so it's unfortunate that we haven't been able to get more engagement, but would gladly help.
Appreciate it. I will pick you up on that. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm still getting used to where the turn mic on is button. Thank you, Director Early, for those questions. Any other questions from my colleagues for Kristen? No? All right, Sina, just a couple quick.
Appreciate her work on this, but I'm saving my powder for tomorrow.
Yeah, totally.
Dry.
I just have two quick questions. One is, and forgive me for not knowing this, under the second largest in Yolo County's agriculture in terms of 21% emissions, what is that? What this off-road transportation, off-road vehicle, what is it? What's agriculture in terms of what in that red pie?
Yeah, it is. It's production, but then also specific ag industries. So there's a separate industry isn't pulled out here. So all of our ag producers, we've got processing plants and things like that. So there's just a large piece of the pie that covers all things agricultural production, processing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then do you have a sense of, and I'm not implying that you should or you do, how drastically different these numbers would be from 16 to 22? You don't have a magic ball, but I mean, I imagine in your world is a variation or variable you may think it could change by. Do you have a
Yeah, that's a great question. I was really hoping to have those updated numbers today. From what I have heard from our consulting team that's working on finalizing it, the slices of the pie are largely the same in terms of percentages.
Mm-hmm.
On the energy consumption side, we had a really dramatic drop off in energy consumption, which was surprising. We actually went through this whole due diligence process of like, gosh, was there county land that was annexed, major businesses that closed down? And really, there's just been a large uptick in solar and energy efficiency over the last 5 years, and that really weighed into that. So that was one of the biggest, I think, like positively surprising decreases that we've seen. And, you know, beyond that, I think transportation is a similar, if not slightly larger, piece of the total pie. The transportation emissions didn't really go down much at all between 2008, which was our previous inventory in 2016. So we're interested to see how it'll pan out between 2016 and today.
Yeah, thank you. I think it's in all of our, anyone that's done CAPS or doesn't see them, we all are in that over 50% of on-road transportation that's the one that we're fighting. So I appreciate all your work and your collaboration with our partner cities on this. Director Stallard has a question. I'll turn to him.
That's a quick question. Obviously, it's an advanced technology, but is the county investigating carbon capture strategies at all?
So we're not looking at industrial scale carbon capture. What we are spending a tremendous amount of time and resources on is nature-based solutions. So I mentioned one of the working groups that we have is National Working Lands. We have been working with a team of farmers and ranchers, the Farm Bureau, Yolo, RCD, to identify the carbon sequestration strategies that, you know, carbon farming, whatever you want to call them, but things like hedgerows, cover cropping, that give us the biggest emissions bang for our buck. And so we've been able to narrow that down to about 20 practices that work in the county for our soil types, our crop types, and have been somewhat tried and tested by farmers, and I think getting that buy-in of practices that actually work is a really large part of the equation. So that's our, you know, transportation is sort of our biggest challenge when it comes to emissions. But there's a lot that's locked in. We've got a lot of folks moving around the county. Sort of one of the big opportunities that we have to draw down carbon is in that carbon sequestration space. So that's the carbon capture that we've really been spending a lot of time on is we're 85, almost 90% national working lands at the county level. And so there's a lot of space to explore in terms of deploying those practices. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. And not seeing any other questions or comments from my colleagues, I'm going to turn and open up public comment for agenda number 5. If we have any public comment in person. Welcome,
Alan Hirsch. So what this committee has done over the last couple of years is very impressive. They spent a lot of time. I've come up with 184 different actions, of which maybe 60 of them trying to do in the next 60 they're gonna price the 60 184 actions, which they've rated on 9 different categories to prioritize them. That's 1854 numbers to basically prioritize them, which to how they're going to get to carbon zero by 2030. That was at their last meeting. Very impressive. Where people worked very hard. But we set a goal of zero carbon by 2030. But I didn't see anywhere any numbers about each one of these projects, where they would, how much greenhouse gas they would really reduce. How do you quantify and set a goal of zero carbon when you don't have a quantitative goal for each one of the tactics to prioritize the tactics? So I was quite concerned. All this good effort, and we do all this outreach, and I don't know how we're going to get to zero carbon in 2030, particularly when we're widening the freeway, which is going to add 15% to the carbon footprint. I know the county is only 15%, or this project is only 15% of the population of the county, but I just don't understand how this is going to happen. And I think you should ask why this committee asked for a presentation to the Ogle County Transportation District about I-80, and they were forbidden to ask for that. They couldn't get any information about I-80. Why was this body not allowed, the commission not allowed to get information about I-80? Why are we, because transportation is so high. Why do we have to play cat and mouse again with information from the public who has concern and care so much about this? Why do we bring the lawyers and say, sorry, you can't talk about the I-80 and that's impact on transportation and greenhouse gases in the county? It just confuses me. What's going on here? And also didn't see any discussion here. When the climate's going to go up, it's going to affect how we grow food, what we can grow, how much water there is. I didn't see a discussion about that. I hope that's important. And land use is intimately related to transportation. And the county's land use plans in the future should be consistent with that to reduce the sprawl. And we know freeway widening encourages people to sprawl out and live in more distant places and consume ag land as a result. So I don't see how this all comes together. And the committee has worked very hard. They're trying the best they can, but I think that they haven't been given good information and good structure. It's a consultant-driven process. And I'm concerned when the consultant goes away, this is all going to go away. This is so important for the future of our community. And I know people work so hard on it, but I'm just really quite concerned that this is not going to take us where we need to. And we can't even talk frankly about what the impact of a widening of the freeway is on our freeway. Talks about how we're denying. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Do we have any other in-person public comments? All right, seeing none, do we have any online public comment?
There are no comments online.
No comments online. All right, I'm going to bring it back to the dais. I'm actually going to turn to our executive director, Ms. Bernstein, to address some of the some of the public comment that was made. Thank you.
Sure. My mic, I don't see the light on. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Working. Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to the comment that was made that we have not been providing information to the climate action adaptation planning process, I mean, I think you heard Kristen's presentation. We've been working very closely with them hand in hand for many, many months. And so I frankly am not aware of any request for information about the I-80 project or anything else that we would have refused to provide. So that's news to me.
Thank you, Autumn. I appreciate you clarifying that and providing accurate information for the public. Any other questions, comments on agenda item number 5? Right. Seeing none, we're going to close agenda item number 5. Thank you, and we're going to move to agenda item number 6. The recommendation to align Yolo TD salary scales with December 2023 benchmarking survey results. I see a lot of names on the presentation slide, so I'm going to turn it to Autumn and let you do any further introductions.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Let me know if I need to lean into the mic. So I'll kick us off, and then I'm going to turn it over to Chad Cedrigo, our Director of Finance and Administration. But I wanted to start with a little bit of background about why this item is coming to you tonight. There's really kind of two main threads going back that brought us here tonight. The first is that the last salary survey that was done for this organization was in 2021, and there were real concerns about the methodology that was employed. And we'll touch a bit more on that during the presentation. But I think it's safe to say there were some lingering issues folks who felt like this salary survey really left some people behind. And as you'll see, when we brought in an independent consultant to do a look, we did find that was true, that while some people in our staff, were in within a reasonable range, there's others who are pretty far off similar positions at other agencies. Second, last year during the budget process, the board deferred action on the cost of living adjustment, or COLA, which under our current policies was extraordinarily high due to inflation and due to the lack of kind of guardrails, if you will, around our current COLA policy. So that led to broader questions about the compensation practices that we have as an agency, which are quite different, frankly, from most other public agencies. The board voted to form an ad hoc committee to take a look at both issues around compensation and our personnel policies related to compensation. The first meeting was in June 2023, directors early and first were appointed to that committee, and they directed staff to conduct the salary survey, which at that point had not yet started, and then to come back when that survey was done. So that has now happened, and you're going to be hearing about that tonight. And I'll also say that the committee met again just last month to review the progress that we've made and recommended that we bring this before you tonight. So we're very grateful to have two fantastic folks that are here. The first is Deb Boutte, who is our HR consultant with CPS HR. She's been with us for about a year now, and this has been a major priority because, as you know, we do not have HR staff. We never have. And so having an HR professional to help guide us through this process has been really critical, and we've been grateful for Deb's work. And the second person who is online but not here with us is Nate Galindo. He is a consultant with GovInvest, which is the firm that we hired to do the compensation study, and also really want to thank Nate for all of his great work over the past year. But with that, I am going to turn it over to Chaz, who is going to kick things off officially. Thanks.
Good evening, Chaz Federigo, Director of Finance and Administration. So as Autumn mentioned, we will be going over the salary benchmarking survey. This is something, as she said, that we discussed last May during the preliminary review of the fiscal year 23-24 budget. Nate Galindo will go through the salary survey report itself, but I just wanted to share a few slides to just kind of give a refresher and an overview of what we did. So that's our team, Nate Galindo of GovInvest and Deborah Boutte, Autumn and myself. Next slide. And so our objective today is, again, to communicate the methodology that was used in this salary survey and that we employed best practices as recommended by our HR consultant and GovInvest, and to provide a walkthrough through the benchmark survey, understand the data and the findings, and then address any of your questions or concerns. Next slide. So the salary survey overview, the purpose was to revisit our compensation to ensure that we were competitive and also fair, and hoping to achieve both, of course, by hiring a third-party consultant to perform the salary survey, and then also comparing our YOLO TD job descriptions and roles with agencies that are like us and roles that are similar. And then the comparable agencies were selected based on the industry, population size, shared labor market, geographical locations, to ensure that we had a meaningful salary comparison. And then also just understanding the data, the factors that were used, how we collected them, and how we determined the market salaries. Next slide. So at the May 2023 meeting, when the ad hoc committee was formed, we had a few questions around what was historically done with the salary ranges and any of the COLA increases. So as we can tell, going as far back as almost 20 years, 2018 and 2021 were the two salary surveys that we have record of. In both of those years, the salary surveys were conducted by someone internal, and using agencies that weren't quite comparable to ours, not in size or industry. We also had outdated job descriptions when the 2018 and 2021 salary survey was done, and in 2018, only four of those positions were adjusted at the time, and that was due to those incumbents being at the max salary range. In 2021, we adjusted the salaries at the lowest salary range based on the results that were collected at the time, and placed incumbents at the lowest range of that salary. And then 2023, we brought on GovInvest, we brought on Ms. Boutte, we had all the job descriptions updated, reviewed by the incumbents and the managers. We also selected 10 comparable agencies, varying in sizes, but similar to what we do. We reviewed other benefits like COLA provisions, and we also applied the median as opposed to applying the average, which addresses any concerns about data outliers. And then incumbents going forward would be placed on the basis of skills, knowledge, abilities, and years of service. Next slide, please. So I'm not going to read all of this. This is the timeline. I really just wanted to have it available to really show how much work we did with this, how careful we were in our approach in selecting agencies and reviewing job descriptions. It was really important to us to get it right, and it was really important to the staff that we have and any potential new hires that we aligned with best practice and that we, you know, found the most similar roles to the ones that we have at the district. So we started this process in May. We initially started with six comparable agencies. We decided that it would be best to include four additional agencies that were similar in size, budget size, and positions as well. By October, we did have a draft, but given that we added a couple, few more comparable agencies, it took us a little while to gather that data. In fact, it took months, and Autumn had to get involved with requesting from them the data that we needed. By November, we had a draft, and we actually held a two-hour meeting with our internal staff to walk through the salary survey results, address any of the questions that they had. I also kept my door open for the next month, month and a half, to any of the employees that wanted to walk through the survey individually. By December, we had the final draft completed. We collected all the job descriptions so that our staff could refer to them. And then in March, we had the ad hoc committee meeting where we reviewed the survey and any of the personnel policy changes that we would be bringing to today's meeting. And then we are here. So that's our timeline. I said I wasn't going to go through the whole thing, but it's important. Yeah. And so this just shows the pages of the salary survey. I'm going to toss it over to Nate to walk through the survey. It might be hard to see on the screen, so I will refer you to your packet that has the tables in it. Nate, on?
Yes, I'm on. Thank you, Jess.
Thank you, Nate.
So hello, everyone. As Chaz mentioned, I will be covering the salary benchmarking analysis that was done for the district to ensure that everyone is aligned with the methodology and takeaways from our market review. We can go ahead and move to the first slide, the introduction slide.
Awesome.
Next slide, please.
Ability to control the volume.
So the contents of this presentation cover a review of market salary rates among various comparators to assess where Yolo Transportation District is competitively positioned currently. As far as methodology goes, we reviewed salary schedules, labor agreements, and job descriptions to ensure that our analysis include direct comparisons to the duties covered by YTD employees. Our primary benchmark for this analysis is a 5% range around median, as this benchmark is less sensitive to outliers or year-over-year changes than the average would be. This suggests that those positioned more than 5% above the median are to be considered as being positioned above market, and those that are 5% below median are considered below market rates. Moving on to the executive summary. Upon conducting our analysis, we found that YTD's salaries were more competitive at the minimum range, but become less competitive as employees reach the maximum end of the salary ranges. Positioning as a whole is mixed among certain job classifications, where four are below a competitive range at all points of the salary range, while three classifications are at or above a competitive range at all points of the salary. In an effort to estimate future pay changes among comparators, we also reviewed upcoming COLAs and found that those that had disclosed upcoming COLAs are expected to be in the 3 to 4% range. Additionally, this deck contains a proposed step schedule for YTD, but assuming no change to the step structure would suggest that the YTD consider notable increases to max salaries, particularly for those that are below market at all points of the salary range. Next slide, please. So these are the these next slides contain an overview of the comparators that we reviewed in our analysis, as well as job classifications at YTD that we reviewed. The main takeaway around this comparator group, though, at least, is that we wanted to include agencies in our analysis that are directly competing for talent with YTD of varying sizes, to holistically capture the market salary rates for employees in your region. Next slide. As I mentioned, this is the list of classifications at YTD who we reviewed closely to ensure that we selected all of the appropriate matches and benchmarks. Next slide. So these next three slides include summary tables highlighting each benchmark and YTD's job classifications, competitive positioning at each of the minimum, midpoint, and maximum ranges. Next slide, please. You can review these a bit more closely in your packets, and you can always reach out if you have questions, but the main point here being that YTD salaries become less competitive among the group as employees reach the maximum salary range. So if you skip ahead two slides, you'll see that the red region on the right-hand side of the table grows. That's indicating classifications that are below market. And what we're looking at right now is the maximum salary range. And you can see this, compared to the previous two slides, has more job classifications that are below market, indicating that salaries become less competitive as the employees reach the maximum salary range. Next slide, please. This table directly compares Yolo Transportation District's current salaries with the median benchmarks at each the minimum, midpoint, and maximum salary ranges. In other words, if the intent was to align each YTD job title exactly at the median at all points of the salary range, they would equal to the blue cells on the right of this table. Next slide. Given the desire to move towards a step schedule, we came up with the following table to illustrate what that could look like at YTD. In this step schedule, each step would have the same number of steps, and each step would reflect a 7% increase from the previous step, ultimately resulting in a 31% difference between minimum and maximum for all job titles. Each job title in this scenario would be equal to or within 5% above the median at the maximum rate. None would be below a competitive range to median at either the minimum or maximum salary ranges. Some considerations are that all but three job classifications will be aligned exactly at market median at the max, and that four classifications will be above a competitive range at the step one rate. Next slide, please.
Excuse me, Nate.
Oh, yes.
This is Deb. Can you stop for just a minute and let the board weigh in and see if they have any questions? Because this is a lot of information to phantom and go through.
Absolutely. I'll pause for questions.
Sure. Thank you, Nate. I appreciate that. Do any of my colleagues have questions they would like to ask before we continue? All right. Seeing none, we will continue. Thank you.
Thank you. So as mentioned earlier, we've reviewed both the latest COLAs that were provided by comparators, as well as any next upcoming COLAs wherever that information was available. We found that comparators introduced a 3-5% COLA previously, and Sacramento Regional will be implementing a 3-4% COLA for their classifications in the upcoming year. County Connection will also be implementing a COLA for 2024, but did not disclose the amount, though we did call it out on this table as one that was upcoming. Next slide, please. Lastly, to better understand how the size of comparator agencies impact salaries, we included a table highlighting the comparator group's budget sizes based on total expenses. We found that most of the group YTD is competing for talent with is considerably larger, but some like STA, Soltrans, and Ubisetter are closer in budget size and salaries as well. And that concludes the salary analysis, but I'll pause there for any further questions.
Thank you again, Nate. Do we have any further questions for Nate before we continue on?
Not a question, a comment. One of the things that came up for me in the comparison agencies, and I just want to flag it for my colleagues, I'm sure you guys have seen it, but again, it was a question that I asked and highlighted. When we talk about comparative agencies and our comparators, we have SACRT with total budget expense at $230 million, right? San Mateo, $184 million, and so on. And then we have YTB at 19.7. And so one of the things that we had a conversation about that I pushed back on was I actually don't necessarily know if I agree that these are necessarily competitive agencies in which we're competing for employees, because the kind of employee that's going to get a job in the Bay Area with Bay Area salaries looks different than the kind of employee that you are getting here in Sacramento. And that's just the reality of it. And so just something I wanted to flag for my colleagues and something that came up for me personally.
Just add a little bit more. Yeah, I mean, we both raised that issue as, you know, especially it's, I think it's hard, especially to compare those Bay Area agencies. I mean, SACRT is one thing. I think that's the other issue. It's less of a maybe an issue about the, like, SACRT in this case, where it's about the geographies. I mean, you know, Solano, a UC Davis as an example. I mean, you know, those are, and even frankly, some of our other sort of local government jurisdictions, including counties and cities, sort of comparable agencies as opposed to just strictly transit agencies, and especially sort of, you know, having a number of the Bay Area transit agency sort of peppered throughout. So I think that was the real key when we were having that discussion. So just wanted to make sure that the rest of the board is aware of that.
Thank you, Director Ferry.
Is this on? Okay.
You got it.
Yeah.
Director Warren.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of add some ground truthing to this, but when the agency was looking for an executive director, we had people that applied from other states, the Bay Area, you know, different far and wide, much farther than this. And I would just say, as far as ground truthing goes, the person who was in the job before Jose went to, I think, Placer County and is there, and Jose, who was our employee, is in San Diego. So I would just say that the people that are in the transportation industry are very focused on the transportation industry and like to stay in the transportation industry, so look for jobs that match their skill set, not necessarily where they live.
Yeah, thank you, Director Warren. That dovetails a little bit into the question I had just around the overall issues that we're having. A lot of times when we look at these, at least on the city level, we look at salary adjustments and things of that nature. We're addressing some sort of an issue around retention, recruitment, things of that nature. We're bringing people in, we're training them, and then they immediately leave and go to a different, higher-paying job. Can you just touch, or somebody on our team, touch on if we're having what our issues are currently with recruitment, retention, and how that relates to the packages that we're providing for potential employees?
Is it still on?
Happy to answer the question. This was also something that we looked at, the impacts on our recruitments. In the last couple years, we, more specifically in the last 2 years, we opened a few recruitments up and had as many as two qualified applicants in another position, which was a grants and procurement specialist. We had none. In more recent recruitments, like for our director positions, including mine, again, the return was a very small pool of candidates. For mine specifically, it was three qualified candidates with only two that participated in the interview process. So we are greatly affected by the number of things, I guess you could say, that we do not offer at the district. One of the concerns that came up during the May 2023 meeting last year around the COLA increase and salary survey was what have we done in the past? I mentioned earlier that we did a 2018 salary survey. It was not done in the way that it should be as far as following best practice. It was also not done by a person who was qualified to do the salary survey. And then in 2021, staff was placed at the bottom of the lowest range of the salary survey results. Additional information that has come up in my research for this meeting is that this district has not received a cost of living adjustment for almost 20 years. So the first one that the staff received was in 2022, And that is when we amended the personnel policy in December of 2021. We did a COLA adjustment as of July 1st, 2022. When we came back around to July 1st, 2023, that is when we wanted to hold off on the COLA pending the salary survey study.
If I may, Deb, were you going to jump in?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'd just like to add that in addition to some of the issues that Chaz was bringing up, that you used to look at California in terms of public sector right now, everybody's hurting in terms of bringing people in, right? And so you have to ask yourself what makes you that agency that somebody wants to work for these days. And you have to look at the whole thing in totality, your diversity, your culture, your pay, your benefits, all of it, right, as a package. Because right now it is a candidate's market. They can go wherever they want. I'm retired twice over as an HR person, and I'm in high demand as of today, right? I could probably go out and get another job and start working another third career, but I'm doing consulting work, and I am turning it down because we just do not have enough people who are interested in public sector. And as a whole, California is trying to look at how do we start bringing people back to public sector? What do we have to do to make changes? And so making yourself competitive is definitely one of those things that starts you in that direction. And as Director Lauren has said about people coming from all over, it's not just in terms of California, it's in the nation as well in terms of public sector work. We're having a very difficult time bringing people to the table. Certain jobs, not so much, but probably 60% of them, we're having a problem, and we're going to experience in the next 5 years probably another 33% turnover in terms of those who are retiring, and we do not have replacements. So just keep those things in mind.
Thank you. All right, and you're good? Mom's good?
Yeah.
You're good. All right.
Just really quickly, to answer your specific question, you know, we got Chaz from Solano County. We got me from Alameda County. We did lose Jose to San Diego. We lost Mike Luke into Placer County. We steal people from Sac RT. They steal people from us. Like, I mean, we're a weird county because we're a small rural county, but we are a very expensive county, and we're sandwiched between the Bay Area and Sacramento, right? And so the reality is, like, we are competing in that job market. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to have the same salaries that they do, and I think that's why we put Yuba Sutter in there. That's why we put San Joaquin in there, to balance it out. But I recognize that it is kind of weird to talk about an agency like Sac RT, which is so much bigger than we are. So I hear that feedback, and I just want to share that that is absolutely the job market that we are competing in.
And I'd like to add one more thing. In terms of adding the larger, you know, the large size agencies that you saw there, it was really imperative that we brought in the lower end level of the agencies, right, at the bottom of that chart that you saw, so that we could have a balance, right? And when you're using the median, that's exactly what happened. So you don't have the outliers are not really compacting the numbers where it impacts it, so you'll have a higher result, right? It comes out into the median between them, and you need to have the high end and the low end, right? And then those right in between. And so that's, as you saw in this slide about the timeline, when we went back with DubInvest to make sure that they added those agencies, because we heard what the ad hoc committee had told us earlier on in the year, and of course, Autumn's conversations with you all over the CPI, the COLA adjustments to the CPI, we had to make sure that that was taken care of. So we put that effort in, and thanks to Autumn being able to go talk to some of those folks, because we weren't able to get the information from them in a timely manner. So we did include it.
Thank you. So before I turn my other colleagues, is there anything else on staff presentation on this item here? No. Director Stoller, did you have any turn to you before public comment?
Yes, Chair and members. Late this afternoon, my staff communicated to me that they felt that this whole issue should be reviewed by the city managers as they, when they meet, perhaps with Autumn, to let them give the benefit of their thinking on this issue. There's a level of discomfort at my city on the survey. The choice of communities is concerning. It's concerning to me, too, as I think Director Early was implying. Everything I hear is that transportation in general, at least transit systems, are headed towards a fiscal cliff. We don't know how that will be resolved. You know, we have a way of working through these things as time goes on. But right now, our numbers are not good, and they're not looking good as we go into the years coming. So, you know, we can pay people whatever, but the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, our job is providing transit to people, and I don't want to see us put ourselves in any more jeopardy. We also exist in a context. The context is we're a municipal type of government. We're an independent government. We're free to do here what we want to do here. We're not, but we're not without regard for the fact that we have sister agencies around us, particularly the four cities that we service. So it would make me happier if our managers had a chance to interact over this and have a level of comfort with us that we were aware of before I'm ready to vote on this. So I just asked my colleagues to give some consideration to that. The proposal is to make it retroactive to July, so if we put it over for a month, let that process unfold. I don't see the harm in it, and hopefully there will be a level of peace in the valley, shall we say, if everybody has a chance to weigh in.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Stoller. So I think what I'd like to do now is just jump to public comment, if that's okay with my colleagues, and we can bring this back to us. Do you? Okay. I'll open up general public comment for agenda item number 6. Welcome.
Welcome, Alan Hirsch. Impressive amount of data here. When we're down the road on this thing, I think Tom has the right idea in terms of getting it from other cities and municipalities about this thing. I think that's very wise. I mean, I have a couple comments about the universe we selected and surveyed here. I think there should be two different universes. One of them is the transportation universe, the agencies we're competing with, like the transportation plans or whatever. But then there's the accounting, the clerical, the less transportation civic jobs, like the IT lead, the IT says the accountant one, accountant two, those were drawn from local. And we should get a large survey, and they should be local because you're attracting people. They're not specific to accounting. I'm surprised on the IT service. This universe is only four. There are lots of, we're competing with all sorts of local agencies for IT stuff. That's nothing specific to transportation. So I'm surprised that the consultant found so few and primarily just the transportation. It's an improvement for next year, I think. And I think maybe we should, because people are the most important part of this agency. They're the engine. The inventory goes down the elevator shaft every night. We should basically have a program of informational interview when people leave and exit interview, and the board should be involved. To listen why people are leaving, why they're unhappy. Is it money? Is it something else going on? Because people are so precious here. And again, your universe is, for the executive director, it was, I don't know how much that premium we paid to get Autumn, but it was well worth it. And that's a national market. But your transportation plans, maybe we want to be with the Bay Area to pick the best and the brightest out of the Bay Area. Maybe that's what we really want to do, those few key positions. And maybe other positions are less important. But we should think strategically how to use our salary to find the best and the brightest for the most strategic positions. Thank you very much. This is hard work, and this is the back shop open to want to appreciate, so I appreciate what you guys are doing here. Thanks.
Brown, do we have any other in-person public comment? All right. Seeing none, Heather, do we have any online public comment?
There are no comments online.
All right. Thank you. With that, we will close public comment on agenda item number 6. And I'm going to bring it back to my colleagues, to Director Stollard, Director Early, and then Director Lauren.
And
Director Ferris. Sorry.
I'm
wanted to mention that I serve on the board of Greater Sacramento Economic Council, and our research has shown that if you make $150,000 in the Bay Area, you can have the same quality of life with a $90,000 salary in the Sacramento region. That's, of course, a gross generalization, but the fact is it's much, much less costly to live in our region. And this survey is essentially 50% Bay Area-related jurisdictions. That's one of my biggest concerns about all this. So I just think it'd be great to make the case that you've tried to make today to our colleagues at the city management level. And then if there's complete understanding and peace, fine. I'm so grateful we have a finance director. Thank you for saying yes to the job. It's very, very hard to hire for your kind of work for any of our jurisdictions. And I agree with you. And I think the problem is systemic. It isn't just a matter of being resolved by salary. We had a city manager once who said, you can't pay people to care. Either they do or they don't. So it isn't just salary that motivates people. I think calling has a role in it. Lifestyle has a role out there, a lot of things. So I just think this is an important move that's being proposed. I think it's worthy of a little more consideration, and hopefully we'll see fit to do that. Thank you for letting me speak twice.
Thank you, Dr. Stallman. Dr. Earle?
So just a couple of things. More of a question, clarifying question. On the YCTD personnel policy amendment number 5, when it says change from 5% increase to step increase, I just wanted to make sure I was understanding that because each step is a 7% increase, really what we're saying there is instead of 5% is 7%. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I see that. Perfect. My city manager is brilliant. Brilliant. Yes. And thank you for that training ground. It made him great for what WestEC is now. I don't think that he would weigh in a way that is more insightful than what the experts that we had here in the months of both meeting as a committee, as well as the work and the significant research that was put in here. I'm aware of that. A couple of other things. I'm also aware and can see on your face, quite frankly, that staff have been waiting a while before us to make a decision on this. And I want to respect that and honor that, because part of what we said with our ad hoc committee, right, was that we as a board would trust the ad hoc committee to go forth, do this work, right, work with you all, and then bring it back to us. And that's exactly what we did, and it's what we promised our staff as well. And so I do want to honor that. And so I, again, I had the insight of being on the committee, listening, working with you guys, and we did not make this recommendation lightly and bring this to the board lightly. And so in support of the recommendation.
Could you approve the jurisdictions in advance?
If you can lean in on your mic, Tom, okay.
The question I asked is, did the committee approve of the jurisdictions that were included in the survey?
Not in advance, but we discussed it at length once the results were brought to us. I mean,
and just realistically, there's only so much you can compare to, right? Like that's the reality of it. And my city manager is not gonna, my city manager, and again, he's brilliant. I don't think that he would be able to say, well, you know, but actually it should be this number. I think what you are going to get, and I think what you're getting at, is are we comfortable with giving those kinds of raises based on the fiscal cliff? That's a different question than this and what we've put up. And just quite frankly, at the end of the day, whether there's a fiscal cliff or not, if there's no staff to do the work, then we can't provide transportation. And at this point in time, we're not competing.
All good points. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Lauren.
Oh, great. I want to say something kind of vulnerable for my city. I've been at Winners for eight years and serving for 8 years, but part of the community for about 30. And Winners kept its salaries artificially low. And in doing so, once the city manager left for other opportunities, it really it really hurt us. It hurt all the employment for the whole city and our ability to retain employees. And without going into too much detail, I see it on the staff, and I know that it's kind of a ghost town. When I go upstairs to work with admin, there's hardly anybody there. So by not having healthy processes in place, it's damaged that organization, and we're doing the best we can to pull out of it. And we're doing the work. With that said, coming from that experience, I want to support staff. I was on this board when we did the windshield survey that occurred a few years ago. I was part of that. I might have been chair for that. We did the best we could with the limited time that we had, but still it wasn't adequate. And this is an excellent job. This is very thorough. I really support it because I support staff and the professionalism. I also really support the steps here. I think the steps add certainty so that Autumn can do her job and get things done without worrying about, you know, how is the market swaying this way or how is the market swaying that way. This is our agreement. And so I think that adds long-term stability to the organization. And I would just say that I respect my colleagues and different opinions, but I'm coming at it from a different place, and that place is to provide support for this item, for the staff recommendation in full.
Thank you, Director Moore. Director Ferris.
Yeah, a couple of quick items. I think both my colleagues have spoken very eloquently about this already. I'll just add a little bit more and sort of reiterate some points too. I mean, first of all, we have been at this up for just about a year at this point. First, nobody has really raised any questions over the course of a year about sort of the process. I haven't heard. Also, I will say the county, I think, is part of the city managers. I mean, I've just heard a lot of city manager talk, but management group. I've not heard any concerns expressed by the county CAO to me about this issue, and that individual knows about this item. We talk about what's on our agendas. So that's a challenge for me. I do believe the county CAO is supportive of this. I guess a couple other quick points. I will say I really am grateful for the work that the staff has done on this. I mean, we're always, oftentimes we're kind of admonished to not, sort of be too, gratuitous at the microphone about the work of staff. But I know the work that's has gone into this, and I'm really grateful for it. So, and I'm really thankful that this agency is on the right track, both in terms of staffing and hiring, but also in terms of coming to the 21st century. In a lot of ways, and including in terms of compensation. These are not 100% all of the sister or agencies that I would maybe have personally chosen, but I also understand, especially after the discussion and explanations by staff as to why they were chosen. We could probably spend more time on coming up with additional agencies. I don't think we're ever going to get a perfect list. I think that's a real important point. And then I guess that I am in support of the staff recommendation and moving it forward. I mean, we have spent in addition to the work that's been done by a variety of staff and consultants, we've also, as a subcommittee, spent a bunch of time on this, and we still are. So that's one other quick point. And then lastly, I guess just the question is, so say we hold off, and come back next month with this. What happens if there's disagreement amongst the city managers and the CAO? What then? What? What's the proposal? I mean, if they just come back with one city manager says, well, I don't like these, this isn't pass the smell test or whatever. I mean, then what do we do at that point? And I think we have a board here that is put here by our respective jurisdictions to make decisions on their behalf. So, I mean, I just would love to hear a little bit from anybody who wants to answer. I mean, and if you do, Director Stallard, that'd be great. But just about what do we do if, the one city manager, for example, or CAO says this is not good, then what do we do then? So,
thank you, Director Clark. I'll turn to Director Stollard.
Thank you. I mean, clearly the sentiment here is to proceed. I'll be respectful, no, because my staff preferred to have the opportunity to interact further about this. I think those are all good questions that have been brought up, and I respect again everyone's feelings. I don't want anybody to think I don't respect and our staff here. And I like pretty much what the agency is, but I do have some concerns. You know, one of the questions I had was the 7%. If we're fought. We're 5% between the steps and Woodland, so I didn't quite understand that. And, 7% is a pretty big jump on a step. So, you know, I thought I'd just like to see, make sure that there's harmony between what's happening here and how we're perceiving it at the communities. And the managers actually get along quite well, so I think they would be of one mind once they had a conversation about it. That's my expectation. But if the board feels inclined to act tonight, that's its right, and I accept it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stollard. Would Chaz or someone from the team like to just touch briefly on the 7%, please? Or Director Stollard's question.
Okay. Have
you online? Yes, I'm still on.
Okay.
Yeah, so in terms of the percentages that we use, what we wanted to do was start from the max, since that's what historically the district has, benchmarked to, was ensuring that the maximum salary range was aligned to market. So at first we started there, and then we played around a little bit with the ranges to see what percent steps made the most sense. For something like a 5% range, given where the market was at, we found that too many classifications would be above a competitive range at the step one rate. So while the maximum salaries would be aligned to the median more or less, the step one rates would, as a result, become higher in their positioning just because of the tighter range. And we found that that was probably a bit more difficult to justify, whereas with the wider ranges at least, we can justify it by saying that these step one rates are more aligned to the market rather than being high at step one and then more aligned to median at the maximum.
If I may, Mr. Chair, just to clarify, because Nate doesn't know the history as well, when he says that's historically what we've done, that's not true. That's just what it says in our personnel policies regarding salary surveys, is that we would start at the max and align to there. So I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Autumn. Appreciate that, and thank you for the clarification. And just quickly, I just want to say thank you to our staff team for doing this, and I do think my colleagues have said everything that needs to be said around this, and I do support moving this item forward. I think it's a piece when you, no matter what line of work you're in, when you say to them, we're going to find what the average is, and we're going to pay you 5% below that on a regular basis, I think it sends a message of where you're at and what we're doing. So I appreciate the conversation and what we've done here this evening, and I do think that the recommendation coming forward, not just from our staff team, but from our two colleagues and the work they have done over the past year, gives me confidence in supporting this item. So with that, I'm going to turn bring it back to the dais. We do have a recommendation from our staff, which is also supported by the subcommittee. And if anyone has a motion, I'll entertain that now.
Chair Chapman, if I could just clarify, too, that the recommendation includes adoption of a resolution 2024-007, which specifies those. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
The below set.
Recommendation and the, what's the number?
007.
007 recommendation.
2024-007.
First time and last time you'll ever say that.
That's right.
007. All right. So we have a motion by Director Warren. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. It was a second by Director Ferris. Do we have any other questions or comments on this agenda item? All right, seeing none, we'll do a roll call. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
All right, motion carries 4-1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, I think Director Early, you said it well. You could see it on Chaz's face. She doesn't have a very good poker face. I just want to just acknowledge all the incredibly hard work that she has been doing, as well as our consultants, to get this right, and to say, I think, as you all know, this has been
something that has been a very big challenge for me since day one, and something that I have felt is really important to do right by our team. And so I just really want to, and I also think that, you know, a conversation with the city managers, you know, I certainly don't ever want to be doing anything in opposition, and it was not intentional to leave them out of this process. It was just not something that we thought about doing. And so I completely respect their wisdom and experience, and I have learned a lot from them, and I value every conversation that I have with them. And we will be meeting with them. I think the date is now May 7th to talk about the budget for next year and work plan. So, but I do also just want to appreciate the board's support, for moving this item forward, in acknowledgement of the work and the impact that it will have. So thank you.
Thank you, Autumn. All right, with that, we're going to close agenda item number 6, and we're going to move to agenda item number 7, changes to personnel policies to implement salary survey. And it looks like Chaz is up again.
Thank you, and I just want to express my gratitude to all of you who are in support of the salary adjustments. The staff, I know, will be very appreciative of it. It's been a long time coming. As Autumn said, you know, a lot of work went into it. We really wanted to do it right this time. So I'm very grateful for your support, and I will work on my facial expressions.
I don't mind.
Okay, so with that, we have the amendments to the personnel rules and regulations that focus more on the changes that we just made. Next slide. So as we were talking about, the existing personnel policy talks about using the average in the salary studies, and that change has been made to apply the median. The first change, next slide, please.
Mm-hmm.
Second change is the cost of living adjustment. This was implemented in the personnel policy effective December 2021. The change here will be setting a minimum of 2% and a maximum of 4%. Next slide, please. The third and fourth change is the determination of salary placement. As we talked about in depth, there will now be a five-step salary structure with 7% between each step. Salary upon hire, the assumption will be that the new hire would be first placed at step one, and that the executive director may review other qualifications to determine a more appropriate step. That will be consistent with how internal staff would be placed as well. And then next slide, please. And then the fifth, again, moving from a 5% as Director Early asked about earlier, 5% increase to step increases, which is the five-step increase. And those are our most significant changes, with just a few terminology changes that we made.
Okay. Thank you. Do you have any questions for Chaz from my colleagues?
Thank you. Okay, I have more of a comment for next year, not for something that I would say we would have to do now. But on the Amendment 3-4, in regards to salary upon hire, I think what we're talking about here is the potential for step one would be the minimum, and then the review by the executive director would be a higher above minimum. At the state level, we called it a HAM. It is what it is. and it's where inequities can actually creep in is what I would share. And again, not something that we would need to address in this moment, but I would like for next year for us to figure out a more concrete way outside of just the executive director reviewing whether there's like questions, something in which it's more tangible. Yeah.
So just what you're saying in terms of having consistency, basically, too, mm-hmm. right? Because you don't want to have inequities coming through the door. So the assumption is the person is walking in the door that they have met minimum qualifications in order to even do the job, correct? So that's your step one. You would then look at your additional years of service, you know, in terms of doing that actual position. So let's say the minimum is 2 years, but this person has 4, right?
Bottoms Inc. could take that into consideration. So they can create a form that can just go right down the list of those things. Right?
Yeah.
And that's how we actually were doing the placement for the individuals into the salary steps once this was approved for the current staff. So the new folks would be addressed the same in the same way, same vein, and a form can be done to actually do it. And I think Chaz already has like a spreadsheet that she was using with the current staff that can be can do just exactly what you're saying. So that you can mark that off of what they qualified for. If somebody has their master's, but you have the bachelor's. That's your minimum, but they have a master's. Then that may be.
And the only pushback I would have on that is some positions are easier to hire than others. And so if, again, I have a PhD, right? Particularly coming out of school, there were many jobs I applied for in which, again, I would be air quote overqualified, but it just, it depends on how hard that position is to hire for. And so again, at the state level, when we did HAMS, and what we also took into account was if you are an executive assistant, for example, that's an entry-level position, even if you come in with a PhD, right, and I don't believe in being overqualified. If you feel like this is where you want to be, I'm going to hire you there. I wouldn't pay that person above a minimum, right? And so, again, not something we need to work out or hash out here. It's just something I'm reflecting on based on my experience and also based on just equity studies at the state level.
Thank you, Director Early. Hey, yeah, Director Warren.
Yeah, I just had a comment about being bilingual. I saw it somewhere in here that there's a compensation if it's necessary for the job, but I was just wondering if you could just remind me of what that was.
We do have a bilingual ad pay is what I guess we can refer to it as bilingual pay. For those who offer services either at our window or during outreach or any interactions that we have that may require someone to speak a different language, written or in person. And that compensation, I believe, is 3%. Yeah, it's not coming to me right now, but we do have that, and we have a number of people who have that at pay. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, I just didn't remember the amount, but I could find it in the past.
I think the max is actually $30 a paycheck, but I can follow up and confirm that with you.
Thank you. Any other clarifying questions or comments for Chaz or our team before we go to public comment? All right, seeing none, I will open up public comment for agenda item number 7. Do we have any in-person public comment? All right, seeing none, do we have any online public comment?
No comment online.
All right. Thank you, Heather. So with that, we will close public comment on agenda item number 7, and I'll return this item back to the dais, my colleagues, to entertain a motion.
And Chair Chapman, if I could, sorry, this resolution doesn't have as exciting in the number, but the action does include adoption of resolution 2024-008.
Okay. I early makes motion for the adoption of, can I just say -008?
The staff recommendation, including the resolution.
Eighth resolution. It's the staff recommendation, including the eighth resolution.
Right, we have a motion by Director Early.
Second.
And a second by Director Frerich. Any other comments from my colleagues? All right, seeing none, we'll move to a vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Abstain? All right. The motion carries 4-1. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And we are going to now move on to agenda item number 8. The Woodland Transit Center Relocation Study Update, and that is going to be Brian Abnett. Welcome, Brian. We have the real Brian Abnett in front of the nameplate now. It's been three of you there tonight.
Good evening, Chair Chapman, members of the board again. Appreciate the opportunity to share with you an update on this item, which is a Downtown Woodland Transit Center study update. Next slide, please. And so this project has a lot of history. But before I get started, I did want to recognize one of our staff members, Courtney Williams, who has been the project manager for this project for most of the past year. One of the actions that you took on the consent calendar was to reclassify a position from associate to a senior that enabled Courtney to transition over to the operations team where he can focus on much needed, focus on grants, grant management, grant applications, because we're so reliant on those. And that was a position that we did have a difficult time trying to fill a couple of years ago. So, I'm trying to carry this project across the finish line, but I do want to recognize his efforts on this project. So, as I mentioned, there's quite a bit of history on this. Back in 2019, UOTD did complete a draft study related to the relocation of the Woodland Transit Center. It was never finalized or approved. And, it followed on the heels of the comprehensive operational analysis that was also completed during that time, also known as YOLO Go. That was a different era and a different time than where we're in now. And one of the drawbacks to that study was that it really did focus on, off-street transit centers, right? And the need to, what that implies is that you then need to acquire property or be able to locate such a transit center, out of the public right of way. So that can increase costs and it can increase delay. So, as I mentioned, circumstances have changed and we have a deteriorating condition at the County Fair Mall. We've introduced microtransit in Woodland, and we really would like to try to find a place where we could, relocate to downtown on a shorter time horizon than what the original draft study, would afford us. And so in April of last year, about a year ago, this board did, have those same sentiments and acted for us to prepare a new analysis for an on-street transit center. Next slide, please. And so with that, we presented to the board a scope of work of, what we intended to look at in that analysis, and we needed to understand, what are the facility requirements for a transit center that would be located off street, and then we would need our consulting team to prepare some concept layouts for you to respond to, and to make sure that it was feasible location, and then also comparing the different locations with each other, and then having cost estimates about what would be the order of magnitude cost to relocate from where we are to someplace on street in the downtown. And so they would do this type of analysis up to about a 10% engineering level, which is basically design concepts, and give us planning level cost estimates. And that was the scope of work that that we contracted with our consultants for. Okay, next slide, please. All right, and so over the past 12 months, we've actually gotten a lot accomplished. We've done a lot of that facility criteria and needs identified. We've looked at, locations that can meet accessibility requirements. We've identified what the operational support would be at a new location. We've identified certain land use and circulation constraints that are, not necessarily, compatible with a large number or volume of transit buses going through, so we're sort of paying attention to where our buses would be potentially routing. Also looking at the uses that front the street and whether or not, a transit center would adversely impact the uses that front the street. And in that, we looked at, several different alternatives. And in analyzing those alternatives, we've also looked at to make sure that the routing works for us and that the turning movements can be made, at all the locations, because once you come into downtown, you need to be able to get back out of downtown, particularly as we're talking about the 42 A and B. We also weren't doing this project in a vacuum. We brought this to the Citizens Advisory Committee in November. We've been in regular coordination and correspondence with the City of Woodland, and we also did a transit rider survey where we received over 500 responses. And so the outcome of all that work that we've done is we've been able to, we think, zero in on what we're calling a preliminary preferred alternative. And with that, we have some planning level cost estimates that are based on some assumptions, but don't get us, I think, all the way where we need to be to kind of fully commit to that preliminary preferred alternative. Next slide, please. So I think I covered some of this ground already, but, you know, timeliness to implement, that's really sort of where we're at right now. If we'd like to get into a new location, you know, quickly. We've spent a lot of time on this and have had multiple iterations of looking at different locations that were sort of beyond the original scope of work, kind of in response to questions and concerns. You know, safety for all users of any you know, street environment, whether they're pedestrian, bicyclists, our own riders, operational safety for our buses, et cetera, those are all really important, as well as ensuring that, you know, wherever we locate does need to be reasonably compatible with our existing with our existing routes. Next slide, please. Okay, and so when we started, you know, considering, okay, you know, which all, where should we start really, you know, focusing in on, you know, locations? And there were lots of different ideas turned out originally, but we sort of zeroed in kind of in this general sort of Court Street vicinity. And we looked at through this, what we're calling first round of alternatives. Alternative one sort of focused in the College and Court Street intersection area. Alternative two focused between First and Third Street. And alternative three would locate the transit center between Main and Court Street. And so then the insets just give you a little bit more detail of sort of where on those block faces we were looking at actually citing the different bus bays. Okay, next slide, please. So going into one of them a little bit more in more detail, and this also provides sort of an aerial view of, you know, what that would look like. And so alternative one here shows, you know, this College and Court intersection here, and with sort of east or westbound vehicles or routes, you know, sort of continuing past the intersection and then using the existing bus turnout. And then they would, in order to return, say, with the 42A and B, they would need to go down another block or two. And so, you know, all of these different alternatives had benefits and drawbacks. And so in this case, this alternative worked really well for routing efficiency and being able to accommodate the buses and the different routes that we have. There's plenty of on-street parking there, or plenty of off-street parking, so that people who might be, you know, coming to this transit center could park in the off-street lot there at the northwest corner of Court and College. We would be taking up very little on-street parking, and it's sort of on the edge of downtown where the parking demand isn't quite as high. But it did have some drawbacks as well. And you can see that those drawbacks in the right column there. And a lot of this had to do with, would users even really recognize this alternative as being a transit center? Would it facilitate an identity as being a transit center? And we really felt like it was going to be problematic. And then the size of the intersection itself and riders needing to potentially cross, you know, two legs of the street in order to make a transfer was really, you know, problematic for us. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the 42 A and B would need to extend further west, you know, increasing, you know, even more the travel times to locate here. So this wasn't our favorite, but it was still one that we looked at.
Hey, Brian, in the interest of time, let's kind of touch lightly on the first round of alternatives and spend a bit more time on our current alternatives.
Sure. Did you go next slide? There we go. All right, alternative two sort of situates us between First and Third Street, and this is one that we did have more interest in internally, and it has, you know, several benefits and drawbacks. The main drawbacks being is that, you know, it's right sort of in the hub of Court Street, just has a lot of the features that you look for a pleasant experience. You've got tree canopy, you've got pedestrian scale lighting, you've got you know, sort of dedicated crosswalks. It's a more pleasing environment, and it works with all of our routing. So, next slide. The drawback to that one is that it would, in that particular alternative, would need to have to occupy, you know, a lot of on-street parking, and so that will come up in a moment in the slide. So,
Alternative 3 puts us right on, go back please, back one slide, on 3rd Street. And so this does have some advantages in that it gets passengers, close to Court Street if they need to be on Court Street, and close to Main Street if that's where their destination is. The street frontage could accommodate it, didn't need a whole lot of infrastructure improvements. But on the other hand, it's a narrow street, causes some operational issues for us. There's a substantial loss of on-street parking, and really there's no eyes on the street here. There's no street activity, and there's no lighting. So thinking about evening time safety and people's comfort levels, this was also a problematic option for us. Next slide, please. And so back in November, we brought this to the Citizens Advisory Committee, and for their action that they took at that meeting was unanimous support for locating this transit center between 1st and 3rd Street on Court Street. So that was tangible feedback we got from them. We did do a transit rider survey as well, recognizing that quite a large number of folks who are using the existing transit center are arriving by walking and bicycling. And so we need to make sure that the new transit center is also accessible by walking and bicycling. And then through our regular, coordination and meetings with City of Woodland, some of the concerns that they had expressed were there is a parcel that has a four-unit housing complex on it that was sort of problematic to have a transit center sort of fronting onto that, so they were wanting us to look at that again. And also on-street, quick pickup and drop off at the post office, they felt like that on-street parking in front of the post office was important. So we agreed to go back and sort of look at those and see what we could do with a second round of analysis. So next slide, please. So that got us to a new set of alternatives that we're now calling alternatives A and C, which focuses on that segment of Court Street between College and First, and then gets us zeroed in a little bit more closely on Court Street, focusing around Second Street. We did have some challenges with A and B from an operational standpoint, and the intersection configuration and buses being able to pull back into the left turn lane heading westbound. And, we can go into more detail later on that, but I'll just leave that there for now. Alternative C has all the benefits that that the other alternative, I think it was alternative 2 in the prior analysis, and it addresses some of the drawbacks. Next slide. Right, so we're able to eliminate the address the post office on-street parking issue. And the crossing at 2nd Street is not controlled in any way. So while there's a nice stamped crossing there, there are some potential safety implications with riders needing to cross the street to get from one bus to the other. And so we're proposing with this an enhanced crossing, potentially with some sort of pedestrian-activated beacon to address that as well. We still have some of the, on-street parking removal issues, and there's also some intersection issues that we need to that were raised in this analysis. It actually applies to all three of those alternatives, but applies to this one as well. Next slide. So this exhibit just shows you a little bit more detail of what the sort of layout of the transit center at this location would look like. The sort of narrow gray rectangles are sort of are the bus bays, and you can see that the vehicles are staged close together, and we feel like this is a really good location and a better user experience than the other alternatives. And again, is in the heart of the downtown. Next slide, please. So we were mentioning routing and circulation earlier in the presentation, and really alternative C doesn't really have much impact to most of our routes. The 211, the 212, the 45 all serve on Court Street already,
and where we're proposing to site the transit center in our preliminary preferred alternative can still accommodate those. The only route that would really be impacted, and it would be impacted in any location downtown, is the 42 A and B. And so what we would need to do to accommodate the 42 A and B is for the B, which would be coming in counterclockwise, coming in off of Main Street, and then both A and B end up making a sort of counterclockwise loop via 3rd Street, Court Street, stopping at the Transit Center, and then making a left on College, and then another left onto Main, and then exiting out, and then continuing on their routes. We do this counterclockwise because this counterclockwise loop because left-hand turns are much more highly preferred from an operational safety standpoint. It gives the buses more sweeping room to get into the travel lane rather than trying to make a tight right turn. And it gives the drivers a better sight line of pedestrians that are in the crosswalk. And also, right turns are problematic. If you can avoid them, you want to, because if you've got bicyclists coming in on the right, it's harder for a bus driver to see a bicyclist, and you end up with what's called a right hook situation, where a bicyclist can get struck by a right turning vehicle if the bicyclist didn't know that the bus was turning right. So that's some of the logic behind preferring those left turns at intersections, and particularly protected left turns. Next slide. Protected left turns clear the intersection so that you can so that the bus can make that left turn without any other vehicles conflicting. And so in this case, just hit the right arrow once. At westbound Court and College, so in this case, the buses that are traveling westbound to Court and College, this is a potentially concerning intersection because they don't have a protected left turn. And this is the movement that our buses will need to make in order to, to complete that loop. Press the right button again, please. And so that traffic signal that's in the orange circle there is what we're looking at and needing to sort of make that a protected left turn, because right now it's a sort of permissive left. When it's clear, the bus can go. But when you have oncoming traffic and you have high volume, you'd like to avoid that if you can. Press the right button again. And so that's generally what we're looking at, trying to determine if we need to upgrade the traffic signal to accommodate that movement. Press the right button again. And at 3rd and Court's another intersection where, conversations with the City of Woodland and also internally, there's no left turn signal here at all. And it doesn't have what are called mast arms. So this would be a pretty significant infrastructure upgrade if we had to do, press the right button, if we had to install additional infrastructure to accommodate that movement, and then also potentially some intersection, traffic performance implications, because that would need to be a split phase, because 3rd Street's a narrower street and you can't get two lanes through there. Next slide, please. So where we've landed on this is that, to be able to move forward with, what we're calling this preliminary preferred alternative, we feel like we need to have a little bit closer look. We thought at this time, at this stage of the process, we would be, asking the board for us to approve a 100%, design contract, but we're asking for a 30% design contract, because we do feel like we need to have a little bit more information before we can fully commit to this alternative, and that's collecting data to understand what the traffic volume and movements are at the intersections that we've referenced. And if they are needed, what are the priorities? Do they both need to be done at the same time? Can they be, can they be phased? Are they needed at all in the very beginning? And then we also need to know what will the cost be associated with it? Does the signal cabinet need to be upgraded? How much is the mast arm, et cetera? So these could be potentially, higher cost items. that the board would want to know before making a final, commitment on this location. And then, of course, we also want to know what are the implications in terms of timing for relocating the transit center to our preliminary preferred alternative. Next slide. Okay, so this gets us to our recommendations, right? We're asking the board to affirm this, again, preliminary preferred alternative. This is where we think we want to be. We think it can work. There's a few, a few more questions that we need to answer, and that's what recommendation number three, gets to, is seeking your support to approve the resolution that will allow us to proceed with 30% design to answer those questions in the prior slide. And we think this is a, cost-effective step, before fully committing. And this, the proposal that we received would not exceed about $84,000. So you have an understanding of what we're asking from a budget standpoint. Next slide, please. We think we'll, this chart shows you that, we spent about a year doing this. It's taken a lot longer than we thought it was going to, but we have made significant progress. And we feel like this next step will take, probably somewhere around 5 to 6 months to complete. And then next slide, please. I think that's the last one. So thanks for your patience. Appreciate it. And look forward to your discussion.
Great. Thank you, Myron, for that in-depth presentation. Something that's been working through for a long time now, so it's tough to not have that be a lengthy conversation. So I'm going to bring this back to my colleagues here up on the dais, and I particularly would like to hear what the City of Woodland has to say around some of the proposals and recommendations, given it's smack dab in the middle of your jurisdiction, and kind of what conversations have happened or not. So I'm going to put Tom on the spot, even though I know he's ready to go.
I don't want to say nay anymore tonight, so thank you for that opportunity. And really, the staff has been tremendous. They presented a series of options, and you wouldn't think it'd be that complicated, but it is. And one thing you may notice is all the options require a fairly minimal amount of modification. Mm-hmm. And basically, West Sacramento has pioneered this, in my opinion, with being able to put their buses right on existing city streets and have a transit center. And that's essentially what is happening here. And I like it because, things change over time, and it's nice if you don't have a major capital investment that you don't want to abandon, but even if you should abandon. So this gives us flexibility to move. I liked originally the Third Street options, but I think there are good reasons for staying on Court. I know our staff had some concerns. I don't know if we've actually got an exact staff recommendation. I'm not sure I heard that. Are you saying you're talking about alternative AC as opposed to just the alternative two?
Yeah, the staff recommendation number two is to affirm alternative C as our preliminary preferred alternative.
Okay.
Just so we know that you're comfortable with us proceeding with recommendation number three.
I participated in some of these discussions, and I finally concluded that the facts are going to make the decisions for us. What can we do that's the least costly but most effective? And I'm quite peaceful with that, and I think there's still some more data. I will ask this question. Have you considered traffic counts on 3rd Street north of Court?
One thing, to answer the question, no, we haven't. If you'd like to, we can think about including that. The city has been, very helpful in providing us with the traffic counts that they have, primarily from the general plan update. So if they already have counts on 3rd Street, then we can
probably do, Brian. And the only reason I say that is because I'm not sure, at least initially, if you really need a left-turn signal moving from 3rd to Court. I don't think the traffic coming down there is very significant. From my own observation, my own office is very close to that intersection. The college intersection is a different story. I think the idea of a dedicated left-hand turn arrow is probably essential there, as I saw it on your recommendation. So, but at the end of the day, I think the resolution of technical questions is going to decide what exactly gets done here. And all I can say is It can't happen too soon. I mean, staff have been putting up with terrible things. Our dear drivers don't feel safe out there at the mall, let alone our riders. So the situation does need early resolution. And are you thinking of an implementation as early as August? That calendar you just showed had green boxes up till August.
Yeah, that will be completion of the 30% design.
So I would think, not the completion or implementation of the project.
Which I think we're probably looking for
Further
out, right?
Well, all right. I'd say let's keep marching forward. I'm done.
Thank you, Tom. Director Warren.
This is very thorough. I just wanted to say I might have missed it, but will there be ample bike parking for bicyclists that take our buses?
To the extent that there's bike parking available in the existing public right-of-way, it would be in, you know, on the sidewalk that exists. That might be what we can accommodate in the short term, but we can definitely look into seeing if there are places where we could put bike parking that the city would be agreeable to, and you know, cover those costs with this project.
And if I may, so I think, you know, we're talking about, you know, just literally right in front of this building. And I did have a tour with Ken Hyatt, the city manager, and also Gerardo Pinedo, the county administrator, to talk about it. And he's very supportive. And so to the extent that the county is willing to allow us to make some of those improvements on their property, then I think we could look at more substantial bike parking. That's the kind of stuff we'll get into in the 100% design phase. And I just think it's really part of the reason I think we thought this was a very attractive location is because we are dealing with the county as the property owner, as opposed to kind of private businesses or others who may not have as much flexibility or, frankly, space to accommodate things like bike parking. So we'll get there.
Thank you, Autumn. Dr. Sollard.
Could we have a prognosis as to when this actual implementation can happen if we're only going to be to 30% design by August?
Autumn's looking at me and I'm looking at her.
I mean, honestly, I think it depends on what we find and, if, you know, the magnitude of improvements that are needed. And, you know, if we don't need to make those improvements prior to occupying the space, then I think we could move fairly quickly. I would say maybe August of 2025. Would be a more realistic time frame. I know, it pains me, believe me.
Mall is boarded up.
I agree. I'd love to get out there as soon as possible, but we have to go through the process and make sure everybody is comfortable, you know, with what we do. If we don't need to make the intersection improvements, depending on how expensive they are, that could slow us down because then we've got to look, you know, we've got to find the money for it, right? So I think we'll know a lot more once we've done this engineering work and have a sense of what exact improvements are going to be needed. Sorry, how's that for a non-answer?
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you, Autumn. Yeah, just quickly, Brian, is there a world in which this comes back in the 30% design or whatever, you get to that point where it's cost prohibitive to use this location? My concern is that are we doubling down on this location and saying no matter what comes back, we are putting this here? Because in terms of delays, if this comes back, and it's like, wow, the infrastructure cost is so significant that this that it's cost prohibitive to put it here. We're then going to go back to these other locations and start all over again, which is going to bump this down the road. So is there thought to analyzing all these at the same time so that we can look at it and say alternative 1, 2, 3, here's what it costs to do this, this, and this, so we're not starting back over again?
A great question. I mean, for any of these alternatives, A through C, they all are going to be dealing with those same two intersections. So, you know, frankly, like, we would have to really go back to square one if we find these intersection improvements are cost prohibitive or that we cannot move in until they're done. What I would say is originally we were hoping we would be able to just go straight to 100% design, but this interim step of going to 30% design, I think, is the cost-effective way to kind of answer the questions without fully committing, you know, to this location. So we see this as kind of an interim measure that is meant to help protect against that. If we find through this 30% design that this is just not a feasible site, then we will have to go back to the drawing board. And, you know, we have some, it just means that we're probably not going to really be able to get into downtown Woodland in the way that we hope, because frankly, there are no other sites that are going to be better. What it would mean is we'd probably have to look at other locations that are really outside of downtown.
Got it. So it would, no matter if this 30% came back as cost prohibitive, none of these alternatives would be on the table then. They all would be scrapped and we would be right back at looking at completely different locations. Okay. All right.
But we're putting 84,000 at risk.
Right. Yeah. Max of 8 and 84. Okay. Thank you. Before we bring it back for a motion, I'm going to open up public comment. Do we have any in-person public comment for agenda item number 8? Welcome.
Welcome. If God is in the details, I think I witness God. A lot of details, a lot of things, a very thorough plan. I just have some thoughts on signal preemption, so the buses aren't dwelled. I think that should be on the list. Brian probably have thought of that, but I'll put it out there. Make sure there's enough trees and shade, not just at the stops for how people walk through. I think the downtown Woodland could, and especially the trees need to be pruned high enough so you can walk under them. There's an issue in downtown Woodland that the trees are not high enough so you can drive under them. Bus shelters should have plenty of shade. So not just for water. Some of the bus shelters are meant for raining and not for shade. We need to make sure that's pretty thoughtful there. And again, the bike shelters are really important too. And I wonder how long people are actually going to lay over there between transferring buses, how long they are, make sure that's comfortable for them and safe. And there's plenty of lighting. Brian's probably thought about all this stuff. So I just mentioned it. And my general sadness is basically we put it on Court Street and not on Main Street. In a real world, when transit was what we really got, people would love to have a bus transit stop in front of their business where people brought people in. But we're still in a world where car storage is given priority over transit accessibility. One bus will cover 10, 20, 30 people. That's a lot of cars that are off the road. We still decided we're going to get car storage priority over bus things. But sounds like a good solution, and thanks for all the attention to detail.
Thank you, Alan. Do we have any other in-person public comment? All right, seeing none, I'll turn to Heather to see if we have any online communications public comment.
Comments online.
All right, thank you, Heather. With that, we will close public comment on agenda number item number 8, and I will return this back to the dais for any further conversations or consideration of a motion.
Chapman, if I may, sorry, on the recommendation, I just wanted to clarify, it does reference the resolution, but we noticed there's a typo in there that it should be 2024-009.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was trying to find where it was.
Sorry. The staff recommendation referenced the resolution, but we noticed in the packet that the attachment
has. Okay, yeah. Great. Thank you.
I'll give a motion.
Sure, I'll entertain a motion by any of my colleagues.
Yes, I'm happy to recommend that we adopt the staff recommended action on this item.
Move a second.
Okay, we have a motion by Director Stollard and a second by Director Early. Do we have any further questions or conversations with my colleagues? Right. Seeing none, we'll go to a vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries 4-0. And it is 4-0 this time. There's only four of us up here for the record. Thank you, and thank you, Brian, for all your work and staff for all your work on this, and to the City of Woodland for your continued patience and partnership on this item, and we'll get there. Okay, so with that, we are on to our regular calendar agenda item number 9, administrative reports. What I will do is we will – I'll turn to Autumn to go down to the administrative reports. I will open up public comment, and then I'll bring it back to my colleagues for any questions, comments, or concerns around what we've heard through administrative reports or in public comment. So with that, I will turn to you, Director Bernstein.
Okay, great. I'll give my executive director's report first, and then we'll go to the TransDev report. Is that how you want to do it?
That sounds great.
Okay,
thanks.
Great. All right. So I'll start with some good news on transit operations funding. Last Thursday, the State COG Transportation Committee voted to recommend $3 million in transit operations funding for Yolo Transportation District. That recommendation will now go to the full State COG board for approval at this Thursday's meeting. This is this funding would come from SB 125. That was the state budget legislation from last year that was intended to help transit agencies who are struggling to recover from the pandemic and are starting to lose the last kind of COVID recovery funding. So we're very pleased with that and looking forward, fingers crossed, to the State College Board approving that recommendation on Thursday. Going next to the yellow 80 managed lanes, as usual, there is a report in your packet, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I will just highlight that tomorrow, Tuesday, April 9th at 5:30 p.m., the California Transportation Commission is holding a public hearing on the tolling authority application for I-80. That's going to be at the Arthur Turner Community Library in West Sacramento, again, at 5:30. No action will be taken at this meeting. There will be commissioners present listening. I'll be giving a presentation along with Sergio Aceves from Caltrans District 3 and James Corliss from SACOG. The three of us will be presenting about the project and then then the commissioners will have an opportunity to hear input from the public. We did post an announcement of this meeting on our website last week. The CTC and CARTA have also posted the announcement on the website. Again, this is a CTC public hearing. But today we also sent an email to our mailing list encouraging people to attend. We do expect the CTC to take action on both the tolling authority application and the $100 million TSIP funding request that was postponed from last month. We expect both of those to be on the agenda for the May 16 through 17 CTC meeting in Orange, the city of Orange in Orange County. What I'm hearing in terms of the EIR from Caltrans, their latest estimate is it should be finalized by the end of this month. And, you know, Greg can perhaps provide in his report any additional information on that. And we do still anticipate this board taking action to obligate our federal infra funding in June, assuming that the CTC does indeed approve the funding request and the tolling authority application in May. All right, going on to everyone's favorite topic, which is roof repair and mold remediation. You'll see there is a written report in the packet on that. You're probably wondering, when are we going to be able to meet in our own boardroom again? We're wondering the same thing, but we do have three pieces of good news. First, the roof has been temporarily patched. Second, the mold remediation work is done, so it is now. We no longer have any health and safety issues in the room. And third, our property insurance has covered the cost of the mold remediation up to $15,000. So that is great news, and that is all Heather's persistence in getting our insurance company to change their mind. Our next step is to permanently fix or replace the roof, rebuild the walls, replace the carpet, and paint. We are currently soliciting bids from contractors on these various pieces and working with the warranty company to see if the roof, which is technically still under warranty, if they're going to help us out with that. So, like the Woodland Transit Center, we do not yet have an ETA for when we'll be able to move back into our old boardroom, but we are moving expeditiously to get that done. And I think our next thing that we'll be bringing to you is a cost estimate for those repairs and how much we're going to have to pay out of our pocket for the repair work that needs to be done. Finally, on financial reporting, last month I reported to you that our audit for our last fiscal year was taking a lot of time. There was a lot of questions, and because of that, we had been unable to finish our reporting to the Federal Transit Administration. I'm very happy to say that audit is now complete. We'll be bringing it to you next month. And with the audit finalized, we are also able to close out our overdue reporting to the FTA. So we are no longer on the red flag list for FTA as far as overdue reporting. And I just want to applaud Chaz and the finance team who have been working around the clock for weeks and weeks and weeks to get all of that work done, as well as the salary survey we just talked about. So grateful to have such great staff on our finance team that have worked so diligently to get all that done. And that concludes my report. Unless there's any questions, do you want to do questions, or shall we go to TransDev's report?
Let's jump to trans stuff. Great. Thank you.
Good evening, Chair Chapman, directors. Well, remember back in the beginning of the year, I mentioned we wanted to be between 3 to 5 each month for new recruits. We've been keeping that number. We have had some turnover. We're still close to our numbers. No problem with sustaining service. One of the issues we've had over the last few years, opposed to our turnover, has been due to new hires within the first 60 days, not employees that have been here. Recently, we just rolled out a new professional operator development program, TransDev, throughout North America. Complete new design to keep them engaged and for retention. So it's all way even from how the classroom's set up to a Chevron or pod station. So far, we did our first classes starting this week. All the way out to even behind the wheel is a complete different setup. So it's just a really more push on to make sure the right-hand turns that we're talking about are left-hand turns, that we have less incidents happening, keeping people engaged. So we're continuing our numbers. We're not exactly where we wanted to be at this point, but we're still moving forward in a good spot. Okay. Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions for Transit?
No.
All right. Thank you. Keep up the good work. And before we just jump to open public comment, I just want to make sure there's not an action in the packet that has 9E as an action item under roof repair. We're not taking action on that.
No.
Correct? Okay. All right. Perfect. Thank you. I will turn to any of my colleagues for board member verbal reports. Do any of my colleagues have any verbal reports? Director Fowler.
I will mention that I was in Buenos Aires and heading to the airport on a full bus in a bus lane that was moving along with choked traffic in three lanes to my right. So it's really impressive what a bus lane makes possible. And, you know, these things are going on all over the world, you know. We're not as progressive sometimes as we like to think we are in this country. It's great to go elsewhere and see what people are doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stollard. Any other board member verbal reports? All right. Seeing none, I'm going to open up public comment for agenda item number 9. Welcome.
Welcome. Hope I get time to pass this out. I can't show slides. This is a revision to what happened at the December 11th board meeting. The links to the slides I talked about. I hope you look at the slides because you can show them.
Thanks.
Thank you. The toll hearings is happening, and Autumn basically said at the KDUT radio that peak hour will see $1 a mile, which would be about $10 for Davis commuters. Catherine Henry said at another meeting, she's the lead staff around the project, tolls will be from 50 cents to $4 a mile. She said tolls could occasionally be $40 from Davis to Sacramento. That's a lot of money. Social equity is important. And I'm quite concerned that basically we haven't really have a plan to deal with social equity. We have a lot of promises, but I don't think we have a funded plan or any details. At least it's not been made public yet. Maybe you heard discussions behind the scenes. And I point out you made a decision at December 11th meeting, the middle slide here, that talked about you chose 4A, which is 60% less revenue than 5A. And you give three people in a car free ride, which is Tahoe commutes, a lot of them. And I don't know what you get out of that, because if you turn this slide over, you will see this is out of Caltrans corridor plan, and it shows the occupancy rate for different scenarios for I-80. And it shows that basically when you give three free rides, you have a trivial 1 or 2, maybe at most 3% increase in carpooling. But it doesn't make the lanes work much more efficient. And you're losing 60% of the revenue that's available for transit and mitigation. And I mentioned mitigation because that has to take a priority on the EIR. We commit to 57 million miles of mitigation a year. It costs $1 a mile to subsidize YOLO bus. So 57 million miles of mitigation is about at least $57 million a year. The revenue only creates $9.6 million, even with the best option, $23 million. There is no money left for social equity. You have no money in front of you. You have not presented anything that shows there's enough money. I also shared with you this letter from, this is a letter that stopped the funding of the project at the CTC meeting. And you'll notice CARB called the analysis exaggerated, and he asked for a reasonably accurate cost-benefit analysis. That's because the promises about traffic congestion release are inadequate. So Caltrans, we have evidence that they will present documents that do not have accurate numbers. And you were relying on those documents. You need to do your due diligence to ask about whether there's money for social equity. And you need to interrogate staff. You can't just basically pass it through.
You need to oversight. So do your due diligence, and you're not happening here. And with these tolls, others, I got to raise lots of questions. And if you don't have enough money for social equity at the end of the day, the buck has to stop somewhere. You were elected to protect us and to make sure that the staff people do the right job and do things that if we don't just push projects. Please, please do your due diligence.
Thank you, Alan. Do we have any other in-person public comment? All right. Seeing no in-person. Heather, do we have any online public comment this evening?
There are no comments online.
All right. Thank you. And with that, we will close public comment on agenda item number 9. And I'm going to turn to our executive director for 9F, long-range calendar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could pull up that slide. Apologies, I did not get to this during my report. So coming up, we do have a very busy couple months because we are getting into budget season. So next month, you're going to be seeing a draft work plan and budget for fiscal year 24-25. You're also going to be getting, as I mentioned, the audited financial report for the last fiscal year. Those are all informational, but we'll be taking your feedback on the work plan and budget to make any refinements before we bring it to you for adoption in June. We hope to also have some action on our roof and building repairs, as well as our updates to ADA policy rider information. So a number of items next month. And then in June, again, preliminary or final action on the budget and work plan, and then the YOLO 80 managed lane FHWA funding obligation. And that should say July up there, but we do have into July, if need be, to approve the final budget if there are any outstanding issues we don't resolve in July. And then we've been wanting to bring you a YOLO Active Transportation Corridor YATSE program update. We're pushing that back into July just because we've got so much on the agenda for the next few months, and we don't want to keep you here until midnight. So we'll look forward for a very substantive update on that in July.
Thank you, Autumn. Just a really quick question on the budget workshop in June, and we're trending a little bit more towards Director Stallard's conversation on our first action item that we had regarding conversations with city managers. Can you just touch briefly on the process of engagement with city managers as that comes forward? I would hate to have it come to us in June and then try and take this back as we're going to try and preemptively have all the information necessary in June so that we can move this forward. Is there briefly the process that you have?
Absolutely. So we'll be releasing the draft budget by April 30th. We do now have all the information from SACOG with regard to the TDA funding allocations that we expect for next year. So we'll release the budget on April 30th. We have a Citizens Advisory Committee meeting that same day, so the CAC will have their first crack at the budget and work plan. And then the TAC, our Technical Advisory Committee, which includes all the cities, and we've explicitly reached out to make sure the city managers themselves are available to participate. We just scheduled that today. It's now, I believe, May 7th is the date. So we will have had that meeting prior to bringing the budget to you. I believe it's May 11th is the date of our next board meeting. I'm sorry. I can look at it instead of guessing.
13th.
May 13th. Thank you. So we'll have had that conversation 1 week before, and we'll be able to transmit to you some of the feedback that we heard from the city managers. And, of course, you'll be able to speak to them as well. So we'll have the benefit of having had that conversation with them prior to having that conversation with you.
That's great. Thank you. I assume that was the case, but just wanted to make sure we brought that up to light to make sure that we had that information moving forward. One thing I do want to touch on briefly in long range, and we heard it in public comment earlier, and congratulations to Director Early and her team in West Sac for landing the whatever we're calling them now, the Sacramento A's. But what we heard, right, was, you know, the thing about this is, you know, is there a role for YTD here, right? We're going to see a huge amount of increased traffic and flow happening there. And is there a way for us to have conversations with the city of West Sac, with whoever is at Sutter, maybe it's already happening, around increased services, bus services? It's not. Great. You know, with one thing we know, I'm still on the CCJPA board, and what we've seen is a huge amount of success in increased trains and increased service around 49ers games, Taylor Swift concerts, Beyonce concerts, and the ridership had gone through the roof because of the adjustments that were made to increase the amount of capacity we have there. So I'm just curious to see if we can maybe start having those conversations, what that looks like. Maybe we have a subcommittee folks that really just kind of dive into maybe there's a short-term 2-3 year contract. What does that look like? And I think it's something that we need to address. We know that IAD is already extremely backed up, and we need to, I think, address that, whether it's drop-offs or in different jurisdictions we ride. But I just would love to see that conversation begin and be fleshed out. So I'd like to have that kind of added to our long range and work closely with our colleagues in Westpac to work through that. Okay. Do any of my colleagues have anything for long range? Okay.
It's daunting to how we get tickets.
Yeah, there's got to be. We got to all be invited.
I have anything to do with it. Nothing. I heard just like y'all did.
That's great.
I'm laughing, but I'm not joking.
Well, congratulations anyway. It's very exciting. I can't wait to see my Boston Red Sox in the 10,000 seat stadium. I can tell you that right now. With that, our next meeting, the next meeting for the Yolo YTD board is scheduled for May 13th. It will be located in this chamber. Barring any changes, we will see folks back here, if not sooner, on May 13th at 6 p.m. in the Yolo County Board of Supervisors conference room here in the wonderful city of Woodland. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.